Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as I've been saying, this administration, the most pro-worker administration, at least of my lifetime, and I would feel safe to say the most pro-worker administration since FDR. Just throwing that out there. This has been an administration clearly on the side of working people, and I'm not surprised to see the U.S. Trade Representative Kathleen Tai and her office coming out and being very proactive and pushing this section of the USMCA, the formerly NAFTA, the new NAFTA, that was going to help Mexican workers organize and ensure that they get independent unions and have the right to collective bargaining and doing some of the things that I think we would like to have here too, but at least in a way ensuring that it happens in Mexico. And Mexico has a leader who's saying that they want that too. So this can be an interesting time. And here to share some thoughts on what exactly it is that the USMCA has done, what part of it we're talking about, and what these workers in Mexico endured, and maybe what the solution is going to be. I've asked Arthur Stanilos to come talk with us. He's the executive director of the Citizens Trade Campaign. Citizenstrade.org is their website. Arthur, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Rick.
So let's walk through this from the beginning. You had the old NAFTA, which, you know, the only labor standards in it were very toothless and easy to get around. Trump renegotiated NAFTA, and there was some good stuff on the labor front, right?
Yeah, no, that's true. So the Trump administration did renegotiate NAFTA. The deal that Trump initially signed off on had a couple of good things in it, but also a ton of junk, like, you know, new monopoly rights for pharmaceutical companies that would have jacked up medicine prices, language locking in deregulation for big tech. And so at that time, labor unions, consumer groups, Democrats in Congress, others, you know, looked at that initial deal and said, no way, like this is not going to pass through Congress as written. And together we were able to force the removal of a lot of the bad language, particularly on medicines, but also were able to add new enforcement provisions that at least give us a shot at trying to enforce NAFTA's labor standards. And so, you know, that deal eventually passed. The Trump administration had the power to enforce labor standards within that revised NAFTA deal. They, for whatever reason, never used those powers.
Right.
But now, less than 2 months after Joe Biden's new U.S. Trade Representative was confirmed, she already has a labor rights enforcement case going. It's one that labor unions didn't even ask her to do. She's done this on her own initiative. And so that alone is a sea change in attitude, right? Do you use trade agreements to try to help corporations get even richer, or do you use them to try to enforce labor rights? And so, you know, this new case and other cases are going to be a good test as to how well that NAFTA revision will or will not work moving forward. When Trump was in office, he didn't even try to make it work. But now we have people in power who are interested in seeing labor rights enforced. We're just going to have to see how far they can get with the tools in place.
Now, obviously, this story is about the 6,000 workers at the GM plant in Silao. Is that how it's pronounced? Silao?
Silao.
And evidently there was an election that went on, and there's a ton of the way it was explained to me, if I thought Amazon was bad, this was 10 times worse, and Amazon was really bad, that these workers, you know, clearly lost the election because of all of the things that went on. And now they're talking about a new election, right?
Yeah. So an issue in this case and in a lot of labor rights abuses cases across Mexico is this issue of what are called protection unions, where the company will work with a corrupt union. They'll sign a contract that the workers had no say in negotiating, no say in approving whatsoever. And this has been the case in Mexico for decade after decade after decade. And under Mexican labor law now, just in the past few years, that practice is supposed to be illegal, but it's still extremely widespread. And so this particular case involves a GM plant in central Mexico that produces hundreds of thousands of the Chevy Silverado and GMC Sierra pickup trucks. you know, a huge proportion of which are shipped, you know, shipped back to the U.S. And this plant has a protection union. Under the new law, the workers there are supposed to get to vote on their contracts. And so the company, you know, essentially tried to orchestrate a rubber stamp type election, you know, to approve that contract. But they got caught. You know, first off, the more than 6,000 workers at the plant had a 15-hour window to vote. They didn't even get to see, to read the contract. It wasn't even posted online. You know, it's like, oh, we've got a contract, vote on it. You don't get to see it. Then a bunch of the ballots that the workers, you know, put in opposing the contract got destroyed, and the protection union has refused to turn in the ballots that were counted over to authorities for account verification. And stuff like this is why, you know, Mexico has wages that are actually far lower than those in China, right? I mean, it's exactly why companies like GM like to set up shop there. Worker rights are not respected. And as a result, you know, workers are paid far, far less for the same exact work that workers in the U.S., you know, and other countries are paid for. And so the Biden administration has officially filed this complaint with the Mexican government. The Mexican government has 10 days to respond. And if some agreement isn't reached to rectify the issue, the U.S. can eventually impose really heavy tariffs on the trucks coming to the U.S. from that plant. It's about a 25% tariff. So when you look at the price of a truck, that's a lot of money. Yeah. And hopefully that's enough to get some justice for the workers at this plant.
Now, if I remember right, there was something talking about like all of the auto, especially in autos, that there was like a minimum wage that had to be paid of a certain $16 pops into my head. But that seems really high for Mexican wages. Do you remember anything about that?
Yeah. So in the new NAFTA deal, there what's called rules of origin, which mean that the parts that go into a big product, like a truck, you know, like a car, that those parts have to be made by workers earning a certain wage. And so when it comes to a car under the new NAFTA deal, you know, in total, all the parts have to be made by workers averaging $16 an hour, which, you know, I mean, it's a good precedent to set that there should be a wage standard in there. The problem is that, you know, it's probably a pretty easy standard to meet, you know, because they throw in stuff like the design of the product, you know, like the white collar folks' wages who are getting, you know, six figure incomes averaging out with the, you know, these workers in Mexico who are making far, 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 far less. You know, so I'm skeptical that that's actually going to benefit any worker in Mexico, let alone in the United States. But you know, it is an interesting precedent that we should be building off of moving forward.
I mean, it's something. I mean, at the end of the day, and this is where, you know, even when the former guy was in the White House, I said, look, the fact that he got some things into the USMCA that I don't think anyone else could have gotten, because I don't think Republicans would have ever gone along with getting rid of the tribunals and an actual some bit of labor law reform. I think, you know, I don't know that it's enough, but at least it was something.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important for listeners to know that the Trump administration never proposed those labor reforms. Like, labor and Democrats in Congress are the ones who fought for it. But, you know, it certainly is true. Some Republicans went along with it who probably would not have were it not for a Republican in the White House. That's absolutely the case.
Yeah. So where do you see this going? Because there is some coordination going on, as I understand, from our U.S. trade rep and the person in Mexico that she deals with. What are we looking for? What do you think? What do you think this is going to bear out?
Yeah, no, it's an interesting question, because there is an administration in Mexico as well that is much more labor friendly than any previous Mexican administration for many decades. And one of the big problems they face is that the state governments in Mexico are often extremely hostile to labor, that, you know, they're part and parcel of this corrupt union, protection union racket, and they don't want workers to have more power. And so the hope is that, you know, these NAFTA cases will, you know, empower those elements in Mexico that are serious about independent unions and are serious about union rights. And also will be a way to pressure the corporations like GM that have always, you know, if not worked hand in hand with these corrupt protection unions, at least look the other way to make them understand, hey, you know, if you continue this, your products are going to face tariffs and the benefit of moving to a low wage nation like Mexico are going to be taken away from you. So, you know, there's a lot of hope right now. The labor unions in the US and Mexico have filed another case under NAFTA for auto parts workers at a Trinex plant across the border, where, you know, workers who tried to form an independent union were illegally dismissed. Their attorney was arrested on trumped up charges. You know, another good example of how worker rights abuses in other countries, you know, in Mexico, not only hurt workers there, and certainly they hurt the workers there first and foremost, but also hurt workers in the U.S. because, you know, at that company, just a few years ago, 1,600 unionized workers in an auto parts plant owned by the same company here in Pennsylvania were laid off when the company decided to move production to Mexico. And so, you know, it just shows, you know, if we want to see good jobs, better wages anywhere, we can't allow this race to the bottom in worker rights to occur. You know, and so again, for the first time ever, we have a good U.S. trade representative willing to try to address these issues. You know, hopefully the tools that she currently has under the current NAFTA pact are going to be strong enough to allow for some of that change to happen. My guess is we're going to have to fight for even better deals and better laws moving forward.
And obviously our trade deals need to be updated with labor law reform happening. And look, this is a step in the right direction. Needs to be much stronger. We need to do much more. But, you know, the fact that we're talking about giving workers in Mexico the opportunity to raise their wages, I think is a good thing, because I think it will stem some of the flight out of the country. But there's still the behemoth in the room, and that's China. And it's still a lot of other places that we've got bad trade deals with. So it's my view that, you know, this is great. It's a step, but we got a lot more to go.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. I mean, this is a trade deal, you know, with Mexico and Canada. That's it. We're offshoring jobs all around the world, in particular to China. And so, you know, if our new trade ambassador, Catherine Tai, can show, you know, number one, where these existing labor standards can be used and how they can be used, and, you know, and maybe number two, where they fall short, hopefully we can get policymakers to push for even bigger changes, you know, on a bilateral basis and then eventually globally. You know, obviously we know that there's some policymakers who are with us on this, but it's going to be a fight. It's going to be a fight to get workers' power. It always has been. It always will be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I'm looking at this and, you know, you go really quick. We've got two cases. I can't imagine that it's going to end here. And there potentially could be a flood of these to the point to where I think the system could completely bog down. And then we end up, you know, in the same kind of mess. No.
Well, I mean, hope, you know, it does take quite a bit of resources to file one of these cases. I mean, I know that the unions who are involved in the filing that happened just this Monday, you know, spent many, many months, you know, sort of getting worker testimonials, preparing legal documents, et cetera, to make sure that they had a solid case that could be won, and that was the complaint that was filed. You know, you're absolutely right that, if these first initial tests of the system are successful, I mean, my hope is it will lead to a flood of additional cases, you know, and some actual change in the system for working people. But, you know, you're right. I mean, the situation in Mexico, you know, is not unique. This GM plant is not unique. The Trinex plant is not unique. This is what workers across the entire economy are facing. And, you know, and the hope is that these initial cases will start to make some change.
Right. So who hears this case? I mean, you said they've built these cases. Who hears the cases?
Yeah. So the U.S., the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative in the White House is the first to sort of review the cases. And then if they decide there's enough here, they initiate the complaint with Mexico. Then Mexico has 10 days to respond, 45 days to you know, sort of come to some sort of plan. And if the two countries can't agree on an action plan to fix the situation, then it's heard by a panel of labor rights experts from both countries. You know, one country picks some of them, the other country picks some of the others, and they make a decision on the case ultimately. So and that's the point where if there's no agreement, you start imposing tariffs.
Okay, because, you know, I'm looking at that. I'm going, you know, again, this is one of those scenarios where it really depends on who's in the White House and who's choosing those people on that panel then, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, this is why, you know, the Trump administration signed off on it, but they never used the power. It's interesting because Joe Biden's U.S. trade representative is actually someone who was in working for Democrats in Congress at the time and helped write many of these mechanisms. And so she knows them inside and out, and hopefully we'll be able to see them through to make actual change and get some workers some justice.
So since, I mean, this is your focus, how long is it going to be before we see the outcome in this? Because as you said, there's some pretty interesting deadlines going on. How soon before we see what the outcome of this is?
Yeah, so they call this a rapid response mechanism. I mean, it's going to take months before there's a final adjudication and final, agreement or imposition of tariffs. But if you look at some of our past trade agreements, the process actually took a decade.
Right.
So this is quite a bit faster. And the fact that, USTR has to respond to petitions within 30 days, and then if they move forward with them, Mexico has to respond within 10 days. That's quite a bit faster than what we've ever had in the past.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to see how this plays out because this could be a great tool in helping to at least attempt to level the playing field. So I'm looking forward to it. But Arthur, I appreciate the time. It's always good talking with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Rick.
Good stuff. Arthur Stamulis, Executive Director of Citizens Trade Campaign, citizenstrade.org, the website. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.